So the two scriptures, the one long one that Larry had to read at the end there on. But the first one, back up to that a minute. The Old Testament, here is Moses leading the people into the wilderness. What did you think about that? They get into the wilderness and it's pretty dry. And they quarreled with Moses. That word quarreled, they contended. They became adversarial. They became enemies with it. It's a strong word, and you need to understand that they were getting pretty tight about things. They were thirsty. I remember once taking a drive with my girls, and we were driving along out in the prairie around Fort Morgan, and I came across a stretch, and it was sandy, and I drove the car down through this little sandy stretch, and this car sank right down to the axles, just slid to a stop. And we were in the middle of nowhere, and the kids were little, and immediately Sarah says, "Dad, I'm really thirsty." And I thought, oh, goodness, this is great. And I was sitting here pondering what to do, and a truck came over the hill, and two farmers in it, and they kind of looked at me and started grinning, tied a little rope, and pulled us right on through there, and we went home. But it was an interesting moment. The second that we were at the point where we might not have water, Sarah caught my angst, and she said, "I am thirsty." Here are the people getting adversarial with Moses, quarreled. I think our country's stuck in that quarreling business. Creature comforts, I'm not happy. My taxes are too high, my taxes are too low, my taxes are going to the wrong places. We're the wrong political party, and the politicians are saying this and not enough of that and too much of this, and the neighbor across the street, their lawn is too long or their lawn is too short, or everybody has something to quarrel about. Get on the highway sometime. Quarrelers. So here are the Israelites in the wilderness. How much faith do you think they had? Just mull that. But I think we could safely say they had little faith. But how much faith do we need? Is there a certain limit? I mean, I have a gas gauge, and it goes from full to empty, but how much is really empty? And how much faith do we need? Jesus travels into Samaria. That's the gospel lesson. This text has got to be one of the pivotal ones in our Christian ministry. He didn't have to go to Samaria. In fact, if you were a good Jew, you did not travel to Samaria. Samaria was a bad place to go. I have to tell you a fun story. You see, I have served a church in northeast in Fort Morgan, southeast in Ordway, north in Johnstown. So I've had a few parishes at different places. By and large, if you want to talk about good places to be and bad places to be, East Colfax is not a place you ever want to be. Do you understand that reputation that East Colfax has? I don't know if it's a news thing. I drove down East Colfax when I moved into the neighborhood, and I thought, well, I don't see all the evil everywhere. I don't quite understand. I have to tell you, I travel on East Colfax sometimes, don't you? I mean, is it really that despicable place? But nonetheless, it has that reputation, and good people would not get caught on East Colfax for various reasons. It's about noon, and I love that passage. This is an important one. Jesus was tired out from his journey, and he's sitting by the well. Does Superman get tired? Does God get tired? And how do we view Jesus? Fully human, fully God, he is fully human as well. And here he is tired. Do you ever get tired? I get tired. And here is a man that understands me. Jesus understands me. I love that. But the disciples are out of the picture. They've gone searching for food, which is probably a good thing because it frees him up. This Samaritan woman comes. unaccompanied woman. Weren't we just talking about East Colfax? And so here comes one of those women that, you know, in that day and age, an unaccompanied woman, there was only really one reason that you don't want to go there. And they were persons non grata. You didn't be around them. Do you remember the first Gulf War? Some of us, I think we're all old enough to remember when that all happened. And we started an alliance to, the United States formed an alliance to oust Saddam Hussein. And France refused to get on board. Do you remember? And everybody in the country got mad at France. They were going to rename French fries. Do you remember that? Nothing French was acceptable. Do you remember that time? You don't remember that? I remember just laughing and laughing. What are you going to call them? Anyway, never mind. We don't want to go down that road anymore. But they were detestable there for a while. Nothing compared to how the Jews felt about Samaritans. Nothing at all. She's hauling water. You ever had to haul water? How many of you had to haul water at some point in your lives? Yeah. My brother and I, we had cattle, and in the wintertime, stock tank would freeze over. So as soon as we got home from school, Mom would say, "Okay, boys." And she would fill the buckets with hot water out of the kitchen sink, and we'd schlep them out to the tank. And the cattle would be standing there looking at us. She says, "You pour water till it's full." And I'd look at the cows and I said, "Go away, don't drink it. I want it to fill up fast here." And I'd pour it in and they'd suck it up like a Dyson vacuum. Boy, they were just sucking that water up. Hauling that water was a pain in the neck. Hauling water, and we take that for granted now. Until you turn around and your water faucet doesn't work or your water's out or whatever. We take that for granted, but this was a serious job, and in some parts of the world it still is. Women spending half a day daily hauling water's miles. And I see them balancing it on their head. I can barely walk standing straight up, and they balance that. That always amazes me. But it's a toil. It's difficult. It's not fun. So Jesus offers her living water. Water, you don't have to come and draw again. If you had this living water, you wouldn't have to. She's ready. Sign me up. How do I get this? Where do you find that? You don't even have a bucket. She is caught in the literal. It's the same thing as Nicodemus with Jesus. They're caught in the literal and they can't quite see, and he's speaking on a whole different plane to them. But think about her first response is to satisfy creature comforts. I wouldn't have to haul water. My goodness, that's a pretty good sales pitch. That's a nice perk. And it made me stop and think a moment how many people really have their relationship with Jesus because of the possible perks they get out of it. Is that why we are in relationship and faithful to Christ? Is because of what we get out. Keep me faithful, Lord. Keep me healthy. I know I don't eat regularly. I know I don't exercise like I should, but make sure I don't get sick, please, Lord. Just take care of me because I don't take care of myself. We want that special something. What kind of faith is that? Is this last resort faith? Is that cheap faith? Is it small faith? What is it? And how much faith do we need? The passage where Jesus is talking to the woman, "Go tell your husband." It's a setup. "I have no husband," she says. She's going to try and skirt it and just give the politically correct answer. She says, "Yeah, I know. You've been married four times and the man you're with is not your husband now." No judgment. But she's astonished that he knows. How could he know these things? How is this about? And he's still talking to her. I served in a couple churches where divorced people were not really accepted in some leadership positions. And that's the year 2000. I mean, what a struggle. And here she was, four marriages and divorces or separations or whatever. We don't know. Easy to judge. Easy to see how she'd be judged. But he doesn't judge her. And he's startled. He startles her. He's not startled. She's startled. He startles her, and she says, she goes to the people and says, he cannot be the Messiah, can he? That's a real strong proclamation, isn't it? That's about this much faith, isn't it? Is it possible that this is him? A very, very weak faith at the very most. It's like making a sandcastle right at the beach before the tide's coming in. It's not going to stand up very much. It's not going to stand very strong. It's a little bitty tribute. It's there, but it's not very strong yet. Washed away with one good wave. So with that one weak statement, she goes to the people, and the people respond somehow. They go and they begin to interact with Jesus. And he abides with them. He goes and stays with them. Our text really soft pedals it. Fred Craddock is my source here. Fred Craddock is a scholar on this. He said that word is abides. And it's a big word and it's a strong word. And it means we are family together. You have Thanksgiving? You have it with people you abide with. We are a family together. We are connected. This church abides in a different way, doesn't it? We are one in some manner. Jesus abides with this people. 2 days, he and the disciples, they don't just go and visit and just kind of hobnob and kind of greet. They have connected family to family. Craddock says the Samaritan woman witnessed to the extent of her faith. Little bit. Just, is it possible this is the Messiah? That's not a very big witness. It, and yet it is enough. Here's Craddock's wrapping statement. No faith is so new, so partial, so unclear that witnessing to Christ is inappropriate. What is enough? Any is enough. Through Christ, it isn't us who does the work. It isn't through the woman's testimony or his disclosure, Jesus' disclosure of the woman's past. The people get to know Jesus on their own. She simply offers that first connection. We are also able to do that. And when we do that, when we begin to offer and connect with, then we do what Jesus did. He began to abide with the people. He and the disciples are abiding together in family.